This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hi, this is Janne, Mr. Gay Finland, and you are listening on the World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9.
This is another podcast of the World Wide Wave on joy.org.au.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community, this is the World Wide Wave.
This is World Wide Wave, Joy's international news and current affairs show. We take you around the globe one country at a time. All the boys in the room tonight. Hello, Damien.
Hello,
welcome,
Matt.
Paul.
Hello.
Dean is here too.
G'day, Matt.
And I am indeed Matt. Now, many people will agree that relationships have their ups and downs, and that's when there's just two people in a relationship. But if you then add a third person, and that person happens to be a closeted man living under Russia's anti-gay propaganda laws, can a loving polyamorous relationship blossom?
How do you prevent jealousy from creeping into the relationship?
How has the polyamorous experience of a straight woman impacted her view of LGBT rights?
For a personal insight into polyamory, tonight we speak with Julia Fox, author of the autobiographical memoir, And Then There Were Three, 67 Letters to Sasha. Here's a taste of what you've got coming up tonight.
For me, it was extremely traumatic. I felt that I could have done so much more if he stayed with us longer. I felt that I failed so-called saving Sasha. I wasn't able to change his life. I was able to change his understanding of himself, and I hope I was able to persuade him that there was nothing wrong with him, but I haven't been able to change his life.
Worldwide Wrap, LGBT news from around the world, scanning the globe for stories for the diverse gay and lesbian communities from Australia's Joy 94.9. This is the Worldwide Wrap.
First to Norway, where Norway's Lutheran Church has voted just yesterday in favour of allowing same-sex marriage, becoming the latest of a small but growing number of churches worldwide to do so. Last year, the French Protestant Church allowed gay marriage blessings, while in the US, the Presbyterian Church has approved changes to the wording of their constitution to include same-sex marriage. It wasn't a small win, it was a huge win. The vote at the annual conference of the Norwegian Lutheran Church was 77% in favour, 88 out of 115 people backing same-sex marriage. Pretty impressive.
That's amazing. I mean, I really do feel now that the tide is well and truly turning worldwide. I mean, if we're getting the churches now on board, it's not just legislation that's, setting the trend, but the churches are also coming on board, so that's fantastic.
They have maintained the out clause for, I shouldn't say the out clause for priests, that could be taken the whole wrong way, the clause that allows them not to preside over a wedding if they do not wish to.
They can opt out.
They can opt out.
Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
Norway, of course, very progressive country, the second country in the world after Denmark to allow same-sex registered partnerships, and they've had same-sex marriage in a legal sense since 2009.
Some more good news. Colombia, their highest court has given the green light to gay marriage in what is otherwise a conservative, mostly Catholic country. The magistrates of the court voted 6-3 against a proposal that ruled that marriage only applied to unions between men and women, and that it was up to the Congress and not the court to decide on same-sex marriage. The ruling means that Colombia is set to become the fourth Latin American nation to fully allow same-sex marriage, after Argentina, Brazil, and Uruguay. Mexico City and several of the Mexican states have also passed regulations that allow gay marriage, and that country's high court has ruled that unions had to be recognised nationally.
This is another significant one because the push has come from the courts. In fact, the courts instructed the parliament they had to pass laws to make this legal. The parliament just didn't. And in fact, the Attorney General has been one of the advocates against this change, and the courts have now come back and said, well, we gave you a chance. We're pushing things through. So this has been going on since 2011, and for it to finally come into law. They're actually awaiting a very final ruling, if you like, the paperwork to come through from the court, but this is a very, very exciting progressive step.
The court was quite progressive because in 2015 they already allowed adopting of children by same-sex couples.
And to put an end to all that wonderful news, we go to Northern Ireland, where the ruling Democratic Unionist Party has promised to keep blocking equal marriage in their 2016 Assembly Manifesto. Now, same-sex marriage in the region, including England, Wales, Scotland and the Republic of Ireland, is already legal. So Northern Ireland is the only
place. They're the laggards, aren't they?
They're the big laggards. Now, what's really interesting about this is that the Northern Irish Assembly backed equal marriage by a vote of 53-51, so a majority, but the party used the peace process powers to override the democratic process and block equality for a fifth time.
So they've drawn on this old law to, you know, basically try to obstruct what there seems to be general public support, like some other countries, and they've bought in to deliberately obstruct this law from going through.
In fact, they've been accused of abusing petitions of concern. Yet, despite all this, they maintain that we don't believe marriage should be redefined.
Continuing the bad news, in Jamaica, the number of people who hate or reject homosexual relationships has actually risen over 20% since 2011, according to a new survey, which was commissioned by JFLAG, the Jamaican Forum of Lesbians, All Sexuals and Gays. And the report showed that since 2012, the number of people who said they hate or reject homosexual relationships has increased 15 points from an already high 46% to 61%. That also followed a 6% rise from 2011 to 2012. And when the figures are broken down, 61% of the general public agreed with the view, as well as 30% of politicians and 14% of employers. Religious and moral concerns were the top reasons for why people disliked homosexual relationships.
Jamaica's got such a bad reputation here too, so...
It's not great.
The bad news continues. In brief, religious police in Malaysia have raided a transgender woman's beauty pageant for violating Islamic law.
In Morocco, a court has convicted one man and is attempted to convict a second for homosexual acts after the pair were beaten and stabbed in the street.
And a poll in the UK claims that over half of British Muslims believe homosexuality should be illegal.
And that's a wrap.
That's your Worldwide Wrap. Keep up with LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like us on Facebook, Worldwide Wave, or visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
Hi, my name is Hope Matumbo from the Multicultural Health and Support Service, and you're listening to the Worldwide Wave.
We're talking polyamorous relationships, loving relationships between more than one person. Florence has messaged in. Thanks, Florence. And a message there from 317. We're going to come back to that because we feel the need to explain the various terminologies.
Taking you around the globe, one country at a time. This is your fun, fast facts.
So the word polyamory is based on the Greek and Latin words for many loves. Poly meaning many and amor meaning love. In plain English, it's primarily about love rather than sex. In fact, there is a polyamorous organisation group here in Victoria. And PolyVic, they describe it as the practice of honest, open, ethical, multiple relationships. It's very much an umbrella term that includes a very wide variety of relationship styles. And this is what we were trying to dissect in preparing for the show, the various definitions and, you know, does that count? Does this count? So
Number of words that have been flying around as well.
Well, that's right. And confusion between polyamory and polygamy, which is interesting because when we, in doing the research, it's one of the questions that people in polyamorous relationships are quite often asked, and it frustrates the hell out of them. Oh, where do we start?
Well, let's begin, I guess, by, you know, what makes a polyamorous relationship different to a, I guess, conventional, monogamous, heterosexual one. And one of them is that there is such a massive dependence on trust and security from everyone. So normally it's just between you and your partner, but if you have multiple partners, then, you know, whatever you do is impacting more than one person. So if you're cheating, that's even more serious in a polyfidelity relationship than a monogamous one, because you've betrayed more than just you've betrayed more than one partner. You've betrayed them both.
And that sense of trust is so strong that it is a real betrayal of that trust.
It's also the concept of models of love, and that's starvation versus abundance. So many people believe that a person who has multiple loves can't give their whole heart to any one person. But the belief goes that if you love one person, you can express your love wholeheartedly. But if you love multiple people, your love is divided up and is therefore not as deep. And
so that's what people against polyamorous relationships say, that, hang on a minute, how can you...
There's a limit to your love.
That's how can you have a whole relationship with one person and yet be with another person as well?
So polyamorous people believe that that's based on the starvation model of love. That is, you only have a limited amount of love, and that love's like a cup of sugar and it runs out over time. But the
it's quite depressing, really.
Well, that's it. But the abundance model of love, which is where polyamorous people are coming from, is based on the belief that love is not a finite resource and that our capacity to love knows no limits.
And
unless maybe as many people as can fit in your house at one time.
Well, that kind of makes sense if you just look at... other relationships. So just because you've got one good friend doesn't mean you can't have another good friend, because you've run out of stuff to give. You know, you can develop meaningful and deep relationships with more than one person. So this is just adding in that romantic aspect as well.
So we're talking polyamory. Polygamy, a little bit different, which is where there's sexual activities with multi-partners, and that can be with or without marriage. And then we throw into the mix bigamy, which is the with marriage bit.
So that's the big no-no.
That's the big
no-no. In Australia.
Which is illegal, and in most countries as well.
Which means you can only be married to one person at one time, basically.
Polyfidelity, which involves multiple romantic relationships with sexual contact restricted to only specific partners in the group. Sub-relationships, which distinguish between primary and secondary relationships. It just goes on and on and on.
Now, we will come back to 317's question, which is about... I'm going to throw it out to you so we can think about this. What are your thoughts on Elton John being exposed in having an open relationship recently? Does his celebrity status excuse his own hypocritical stance for wanting a title for his partner as well? Does he want his cake and eat it too? Cake and eat it too is a common thing that comes up in these sorts of discussions about polyamory. And our guest tonight has intimate understanding of those workings.
It's consensual, non-monogamy, what people usually perceive of a relationship where more than two people involved. They usually associate it with negative things like cheating, running around, having multiple partners, lying to your partner. But polyamory is not the same thing. It's a consensual relationship where all people know about each other, take care of each other, respect each other, cohabitate with each other.
So tell us the story of how you ended up in a polyamorous relationship.
I lived with my husband for a number of years before finding out that he used to have a homosexual relationship in his youth. And it so happened that the person that he had a relationship with was still living in a country where a homosexual relationship were not encouraged, to say the least. So we decided to find him and help him out to escape Ukraine. It just so happened that I never planned on that, but I fell in love with him. And somehow we all fell into a relationship. The three of us were living together for about 2 years.
I guess for many people, negotiating a one-to-one relationship has its challenges. How much more complexity is added with a third person and indeed a second relationship?
Surprisingly, not much more than with just one person. The relationships are challenging either way. And surprisingly, when a third person comes in, if the chemistry is right and it's the right person, it just takes a bit of a juggling with how much time and attention you spend with one another. It's not always three people at the same time. Very often we were paired up, and that's usually the juggling of pairing up and trying to make sure that the third person is not left out. Or on the opposite, if someone wants to have a time for themselves, it's important to let them be. So, yes, juggling and a bit of a jealousy that you have to overcome, or quite a bit of it, actually, sometimes. That's challenging. But apart from that, I'm sure it could work out for sometimes longer than paired relationship.
Bonjour, c'est Tina René. Vous écoutez La Joie 94.9. Darling.
Hello, Australia. This is Noam Apple and Tol from Apple Models in Thailand. The world's first transgender model division on Joy 94.9.
Our guest tonight has an intimate understanding of the workings of polyamorous relationships. We were just listening to Julia Fox, who discovered that her husband, George, had a relationship with a man named Sasha in college. So they decided to track him down, and what developed surprised them all. Now, she shared their journey with the world by releasing the book, and then there were 367 letters to Sasha. Now, Julia was explaining that one of the things that three people in a relationship needed to overcome is jealousy of the other two being together. And we asked Julia how long it took for them to overcome this jealousy.
The initial reaction was a bit strange, obviously, and unusual when you see your partner with someone else. But I'm sure it was haunting us quite a bit throughout the relationship, but not as much. After the first couple of months, we had it all nailed down, and it wasn't that much of a deal.
And how has that added dimension changed your marriage to your husband? Has that enriched it? Has that added different dimensions?
It made us much stronger and made us understand each other much more. We've questioned things that we've never questioned before, and we found out things about each other that we never thought we would. And after Sasha was gone from our relationship, it changed for the better. We communicate so much better than we used to. And we share now. Not many couples claim that they've experienced together. So I say, yes, absolutely. A new dimension, something that not that many couples experience.
Now, let's just talk about Sasha there. He came from Russia and Ukraine, and he was, in fact, closeted. What effect did that have on how each of you developed in the relationship?
Yes, a huge effect on him personally and on our relationship, because throughout the relationship, I felt that it was my job to explain to him and to persuade him that there was absolutely nothing wrong with him being the way he was, because he was socialized to believe that there was something wrong with him, and whatever he wanted to be, he felt it was shameful. So trying to explain to him that it's okay to come out, it's fine to fancy male, it's fine not to be in a heterosexual relationship, because he was married for most of his life, as majority of gay people in the former Soviet Union and other places, they were forced to create heterosexual relationships to blend in. He's now 55 years old. And as I realized, it's not just him. Many people decide that they cannot come out, and they just stay in the closet for the rest of their lives, because once you reach a certain age, sometimes it's impossible to rebuild your life, and some people find that they cannot come out and face their grown children and community that they've lived for most of their life. And that was the case with Sasha.
Now, the relationship has ended, the polyamorous relationship has ended.
Yes.
Why was that? And does Sasha know about the book? Does he have any thoughts on the book?
No, he doesn't know about the book. Sasha decided to go back to his previous life. He felt that he cannot change anything, or he doesn't have the stamina to do it at this age. And unfortunately, we decided to stop communicating for some time. It was too painful for all people involved. Because I couldn't communicate with Sasha for a number of years, my only way of communicating, quote-unquote, with him was writing. And that's how the book came about. He doesn't know about it, and the names have been changed. Some of them have been changed in order to preserve his privacy because he hasn't come out, and he's in the country where if someone were to find out about him, he would face consequences.
What do you think he would think about it?
Well, unfortunately, I don't think he would be... he wouldn't be very happy to share it with anybody that he knows, obviously. And if he were out of his country and if he were in the western part of the world, it wouldn't be an issue. But because he decided to go back, it's not a good idea for anybody who knows him to be familiar with the book. So, no, it's pretty much, it's not going to be. Sorry, sometimes I'm emotional. Mm-hmm. And
I mean,
my apologies.
For you personally, was writing the book a part of your way of getting through that emotion?
Absolutely. For me, it was extremely traumatic to part. I felt that I could have done so much more if he stayed with us longer. I felt that I failed in so-called saving Sasha. I wasn't able to change his life. I was able to change his understanding of himself, and I hope I was able to persuade him that there was nothing wrong with him, but I haven't been able to change his life. To me, writing to him was a way of therapy, I guess, and a way of communicating with him where I couldn't. And when I was writing the book, I understand so much more about gay community and legal rights and psychological issues. So to me, this whole writing process was a learning process at the same time, because when we had a relationship with Sasha, it was much more of an emotional roller coaster. And when he was gone, it was more of a learning experience and understanding how things work in the world.
That's Julia Fox, author of the autobiographical memoir And Then There Were Three, 67 Letters to Sasha, explaining there her emotional journey of putting this experience on paper and, I guess, sending it out publicly. It sort of got me thinking that polyamory seems to be such a secret thing. It seems...
Well, duh, like, stating the obvious there, Matt, anything that's not the monogamous heterosexual relationship is, you know, it's the outsider, it's the
one... But it's even beyond that, because, you know, being gay, you can come out to people and there's a level of acceptance to that. I'm just trying to picture how you would come out to somebody as polyamorous.
On Tumblr. It's all over Tumblr.
Really?
Yep. If you follow Tumblr and you go to any sort of, you know, gay sort of hosted Tumblr page, it'll be like, oh, there's three of them. You know, it's surprisingly common.
I think there's similarities with the homosexual, heterosexual thing in that if ever you're trying to hide any element of your life, then that's going to create stress and anxiety, and it's, you know, it's not going to be a source of good things. And some of the articles I was reading leading up to this show was basically people in polyamorous relationships saying how important it is for them to be open with people, you know, their family, their friends, about it. Because when you're having, you know, lunch with someone or, you know, going to dinner with someone, you can bring along many partners and not really have to be having some cover story or making things up or, you know.
Florence has messaged in. How do they compartmentalise it all in such a busy world? So I'm with you, Florence. Good on them, but I feel exhausted listening to them.
That's very interesting, because in our Taste of Radio intake, which was a couple of years ago now, there was someone who was in a polyamorous relationship, and they said that it was all about scheduling, and they would meet together, and they would have their diaries out, and it was all about making sure that they were all lined up, and, oh, good, Tuesday, yep, Tuesday at 4, that works for me. So there was a lot to do with that. So it wasn't just compartmentalizing their emotions. It was also, there's a lot of practicalities involved as well.
Florence, thanks for that comment. I'd really like to speak to that because I think, well, this is obviously just the way I see it, is it's not about compartmentalizing. Compartmentalizing.
I learned something today.
It's, you know, we're sort of having a bit of a discussion off air about this, about we have this notion that we have the one true love and we find that one person and they fulfill us. But, you know, there's another angle that says, well, we're quite complex beings. Perhaps one person does not meet all our needs, and this is where having multiple relationships can be open relationships where it's ethical and everyone knows what's going on, can be a good way of kind of, you know, having that fuller experience.
And some of us might want to be fulfilled by more than one person at one time.
And I did also like Julia's comments there that it enriched her marriage. So her husband, who she was with first before the relationship was opened up, that she felt that because they had to be more open with their communication,
honest.
It actually more honest, it enriched their marriage as it is. Now, Julia, and given her personal experience and the additional research she completed in writing the book, we asked Julia if her views on LGBT issues and community had changed.
Absolutely. First of all, I've never paid much attention to this. Just like we hear news about many things in the world, not necessarily we all of them touch our hearts. There is no one in the family. And in my family, there was no members of LGBT community. I never paid much attention to it until it touched me personally. Only then I realized what a torture it must be for all of these people to go through something like this. And I tried to imagine the world where I wouldn't be allowed to be with someone of the opposite sex, for example. If the world was upside down, if we were suddenly told that, no, women can only create family unions with women. Men can do it with men. And I fancied men. I didn't fancy women. What would I feel? So to understand all that, it was a bit of an eye-opening experience, because just like when we read about refugees, we can't understand what refugees go through because we never experienced that. The same with LGBT community. It's very difficult to understand what these people go through unless it touches you personally.
The book is And Then There Were Three, 67 Letters to Sasha. The author is Julia Fox. Thanks, Julia, for joining us on Worldwide Wave.
Thank you so much, Matt. Thank you.
Want to hear more? Find out about LGBT life in over 100 countries. Download free podcasts of this show. Subscribe to iTunes or follow us on Twitter. Visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
Hi, I'm Bisi Alimi and I'm fighting for LGBT rights of people in Nigeria. It's great to know we have friends and supporters like you at Joy 94.9.
We are talking polyamory tonight. Question has come in. Thanks, guys. I'm open-minded. What's the difference between that, polyamory, and swingers?
Polyester shirts and key parties,
keys,
I think.
Keys, yeah. No.
We're glad you asked.
So swingers is more about, well, essentially it's wife swapping or partner swapping. So it's non-monogamous behaviour between singles and partners.
Right.
And yeah, it's about the sex. But it's actually interesting that the definition that we found is that it's about the sex as a recreational or social activity. So it's about the fun. Whereas polyamory or polyamorous relationships are more about the commitment
and the
trust.
It's about the romantic. I guess the easier way to think about it is that polyamory is about the simultaneous romantic relationship.
And another one, in Spain has marched for polyamorous rights recently. Good on you, Spain. We found a little clip off BuzzFeed, which they went out to their readers and asked, you know, if you had a polyamorous person in front of you, what questions would you like to ask them? And it's pretty fascinating.
So, is every sexual experience an orgy?
Yes. I'm so exhausted.
No, do you know how hard it is to plan an orgy?
And orgies are not that common. I've been to one, and most of the time I spent there was in the corner eating Oreos. Why isn't one person enough? By that logic, you should only have to have one friend.
I have friends who I'm just Facebook friends with and friends who I would pick up from jail. It's not that one person isn't enough. It's that lots of people fascinate me.
What's the difference between poly and cheating?
The difference between poly and cheating is that cheating is a violation of the relationship.
Polyamory is all about consensual discussion, being on the same page.
You make out with somebody else, that's part of the deal.
It's not about betrayal. It couldn't be any different.
Is it due to your religion? You're thinking of polygamy.
Does it bother you that some people don't know the difference between polyamory and polygamy? Most definitely that bothers me. Polygamy, for the most part, One is more of a legal term. Two, it's more linked to religion. It's more about the man and some subservient women. Polyamory is egalitarian. Everyone has a voice.
What's the biggest tool to help polyamory work?
Communication.
Being honest. You have to talk about what you think, how you feel.
Love and compassion comes first. Is non-monogamy normal? I think maybe the question really is monogamy normal? We can choose to be monogamous, just like we can choose to be vegetarian. But as Dr. Ryan says, that doesn't mean the bacon won't still smell good. It's okay to be non-monogamous as long as you do it in an ethical way that doesn't betray anyone. Oh, how do you deal with jealousy?
In seriousness, jealousy is something we all deal with. You know, we're jealous of people in our industry. Sometimes we're jealous of people in our family. But for some reason, we consider sexual jealousy to be this insurmountable problem. And it's not.
Another thing that can help with jealousy is meeting any of your partner's potential partners. We blow up in our mind what they're like. We think that they're a supermodel or they're somebody that's out to get us.
I want great experiences for my partner. And if that includes a different lover, then I'm okay with that.
Does it bother you that people just don't understand? I am a bisexual plus-sized nightclub entertainer who grew up with two moms in Texas. I find it's best not to worry what other people think.
Do you have any advice for young polyamorous people? My advice is to be honest, no matter what. Don't pretend to be chill with things you're not chill with just because you want to be cool, poly.
Reach out to different resources and just educate yourself. Take your instincts past just what you think is right and really listen to people who have done this for a long time.
Figure out who you are and stay true to it. Don't try to change and don't try to change other people.
You are listening to the World Wide Wave on Joy 94.9, where tonight we have gone to the world of polyamory.
Or Polly. You can shorten it. Polly is quite a nickname for it.
What a big and diverse world it actually is.
It is. And although that was an obviously American clip, I'm sure there have been people just looking at the questions we've had in tonight. It is something that people are inquisitive about.
Inquisitive is good, judgmental is not.
Very true, very true. In fact, opposition to polygamy, so there's, or polyamory, see, I knew I was going to do it, polyamory.
All those messages are coming in now.
You know, it is, I mean, religion is often cited as one of those reasons where people say, it comes back to that whole thing about it not being the, what is viewed as a traditional
not
relationship.
The right moral, it's not ethical right. thing, right. yeah.
But there's some other things that have come up or that people in polyamorous relationships have said they feel these are reasons why people are in opposition to them. First one is envy, that they're actually
we're all jealous
envious,
of them.
Jealous of them, which is interesting. Another reason has to do with social obsession with an anti-sex cultural bias. So that thing that, you know, you're not meant to talk about sex and that's evil and...
Is that really a thing in this day and age?
I'm sure in some cultures and in some places. Not in this room, perhaps.
What about this one? Another opposition to polyamory is the feeling of guilt, in the sense that people who have had or are having affairs often feel that guilt. And, hello, that's because you're not doing it. What you're doing is not open and honest and ethical.
And that comes back to that. That's that base... item that distinguishes that base part of the definition that is it's about being open and honest about your relationships.
Absolutely. So, like, duh, that's obviously a reflection on the person having the affair that rather than the person in the polyamorous relationship. So,
I did like the line in that clip though about bacon though. You might not.
You can be vegan, but bacon still smells good.
That's right, indeed. You're on World Wide Wave. We are tonight looking at polyamory.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like World Wide Wave on Facebook now.
Hi, this is Robin Tyler, and I am a producer. I'm an activist. I'm a comic, and I'm also legally married to my wife, Diane Olson, for over 7 years. On the World Wide Wave.
Good on you. Tonight we've been talking about polyamory, not polygamy.
Not polygamy. I knew that would happen. A big thank you to our guest tonight, Julia Fox. She's the author of an autobiographical memoir. And Then There Were Three, 67 Letters to Sasha. You can find it at your favourite online bookstore. And if this has got you interested, we did mention there is a local Victorian polyamory community. You can find them at polyvic.org.au.
There's also a few good other resources if you're listening in from around the world. So have a quick search on the internet. There's some great resources on polyamory worldwide where you can get answers to a lot of those frequent questions.
Message comes through. Last one. Thank you, Florence. View it through a sociological prism. It's healthy and normal. What a great way to finish. Big thank you to our Facebook messages. Next week, we're talking to the world's first gay imam. Yeah, tune in for that one.
Controversial.
We'll catch you next week on the World Wide Wave.
Thank you for listening to the World Wide Wave podcast. We're always looking for interested guests and news tips. You can email us at worldwidewave@joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.